Prideaux, chains or candy? In fact, it was to be given an alarming reassurance. Reassuring because it was a promise from Theodore, speaking at his sanest, that in the event of danger, we'd be put in a safe place, along with his family. Alarming because it suggested that battle was imminent. That was not my only anxiety. Among the great concourse of priests, generals, courtiers, astrologers and servants assembled before the Red Pavilion to hear His Majesty's pronouncements were a number of his women, with the bloated Queen Tamagno to the fore. She was seated with her attendants close to the King, being fanned with great ostrich plumes, and once again I was conscious of being a prize, like a prized bullock in the ring. Prideaux muttered beside me, "Careful of that one, sir. She's a Haymarket hussar, and quite desperate altogether." From which I gathered that he, too, had taken the lady's fancy and avoided her for his own good. "Haymarket or Grant Road?" says I. And he said, 'twas no joke, Theodore being a real mad miser with his women. "A fellow on a sentry go at the harem catched a cup of tej from one of the concubines and was lashed to a pulp. Best to keep together when the likes of Madame Tamagno's on the prowl. Safety in numbers, what?" "Unless she likes to drill by platoons," says I. And he exclaimed, "I say!" At which point Theodore announced that it was time for him to address the troops, who'd been waiting patiently in the sun for an hour or more. So we were marshalled by Dimash and trooped obediently in the King's wake through the camp to the plain where the flower of the Habesh military stood at attention in orderly silence, and gazing at the huge array under the silken banners, I found myself praying that Napier would keep to the open ground. The speech was pure Theodore, a rousing address contradicted at the end. He began by trotting before them on a stallion, and then dismounted to climb on a rock, displaying himself in his rainbow attire and delivering a great harangue against the invaders of the country.
"Understand," bellows he, "that in a day or two you will be obliged to confront the finest army in the world outside Africa, men far superior to you in strength and in arms, whose very uniforms are bedecked with gold, to say nothing of their treasures, which can only be borne by elephants."
That'll cheer them up, thinks I. But then he went on, flourishing his arms on high.
"Are you ready to fight?" bawls he. "To fight and enrich yourselves with the spoil of these white slaves? Will you conquer, or will you leave me in the lurch? Think of my great deeds in the past, of my conquests, of great battles in which you have triumphed over my enemies. You have adorned your weapons with their weapons."
Prolonged cheering.
"When these white Kaffirs approach you, what will you do? Will you wait until they fire on you, and before they can reload, will you fall upon them with your spears?"
Less enthusiastic cheers.
"Your valour will meet with its reward, and you will enrich yourselves with spoils beside which this rich dress that I am wearing will seem but a shabby trifle."
Sensation and clashing of spears and swords. Stirring stuff. And I was remarking to Prideaux on the neat way he'd cried up our army and then changed tack by depicting us as lambs to the slaughter, when a beaming old codger at the head of one of the foot regiments stepped forward, brandishing his spear and shouting,
"Oh, only wait, great king, until these foreign asses make their appearance. We'll tear them to pieces, and those who are lucky enough to escape will have a sorry tale to tell in England."
To which an intelligent leader would have responded with a hearty grin and a flourished fist. So, what does Theodore do? Waits for the cheering to die down, and then cries,
"What are you talking about, you old fool? Have you ever seen a British soldier? Do you know what weapons he carries? Why, before you know where you are, he'll have given you a belly full of bullets. These people have cannon, elephants, guns without number. We can't fight them. You think our muskets are any good? If they were, they wouldn't have sold them to us."
And while his army stared in amazed silence, he turned to the priests and generals and courtiers.
"It's your fault, you people of Magdala. You should have advised me better."
Do you know, for a second I thought he was trying a damn silly joke. But he wasn't. All in a moment his black mood had come on him, and he was telling the truth. Why, heaven only knows, He'd given his troops Jingo and Ginger, and now he was striding off to his tent with a face like a wet week, leaving them stunned and silent with the fight not clean out of them. By the way, if you doubt my story, look at Blanc and Rassam. After his parade, he flung himself